Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
It's Valentine's Day, and for some sweethearts, they will be listening to the sound of the Sweet Adelines, a barbershop quartet. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. This morning, we're going to be talking to some local musicians here on the Eastern Shore, and we begin first with a barbershop quartet. The genre actually came about in the second half of the 19th century, where patrons who waited for haircuts turned to vocalizing some spirituals, folk songs, and popular tunes. It was also then later picked up and made famous such songs as Shine On Harvest Moon and Sweet Adeline. The genre died out somewhere in about the 1920s, but then was revived in the late 1930s. By 1945, the Sweet Adelines International was created by Edna Mae Anderson of Tulsa, Oklahoma. It recently boasted some 24,000 members singing in English in countries ranging from the United States and England to Germany and Japan. We have in the studio with us Faith Flynn, who is with the Ocean Bay Chorus in Salisbury. And welcome to the program, first of all.
Thank you.
Well, tell me a little bit about, give me a sense about the history of the Adelines. I sort of went through some of the barbershop quartet issue, but give us a sense about the history of that.
Well, it's true that the men's barbershop quartet began first, and the women, the wives of those men, wanted something to do during the same evening. So in 1945, they formed their own Sweet Adeline group and began singing four-part harmony as well.
So give us a sense about what's the history of the local chorus here, and is it officially affiliated with the International group?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. International has about 500 choruses worldwide, and those choruses range in size from 12 members to 200 members. And as you mentioned earlier, they all have to speak and sing in English when we compete. And Ocean Bay Chapter was formed in the early 1960s by a few ladies. And Sweet Adelines International has some guidelines that you have to meet before you can become an official chorus. And those guidelines were met. And the chorus through the years has waxed and waned. Sometimes we have 12 members, sometimes we have 15, sometimes we have 45, sometimes we have 50. Ladies come and go, just like everything else.
So what got you involved?
Actually, I started singing with Sweet Adelines. I was introduced to it by my daughter's therapist, Nancy Sterling, over at Health South. Her husband, Tom Sterling, is or was a well-known director in the area. He's since passed on. But I went for the social interaction, a night out without my daughter, my children. And eventually she ended up coming with me, and she's been welcomed by the group. And so what starts as one thing sometimes leads to another.
Does she also then sing with the Adelines?
She is an honorary member. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have some honorary members, some older ladies that can't go out and perform with us anymore, and some younger girls that maybe don't quite meet the requirements by Sweet Adelines to be an official member. And yet they're honorary members of our group, and we allow them to participate in our activities and our performances and treat them as regular members. The only thing they can't do is to participate in annual competitions. Sweet Adelines has annual competitions. And ours, for our region, are held in Ocean City.
So what kind of women participate in this? I mean, what kinds of walks of life, and how do they get from not singing, that is, in a group, to singing like your group?
Well, we believe that if you can speak, you can sing.
Okay.
Yes. Because singing is just drawn out words. It's just drawn out words. And a lot of women, the first thing you ask them is, why don't you come and see what our group is about? Oh, I can't sing. Wow, yes, you can. We have a part for you. That's what's wonderful. Sweet Adeline's has four different parts. We have the lead, which is the melody. We have the tenor, which sings the harmony above the melody. And then we have the baritone, which fits in there somehow, and the bass, which is the bottom. And they range from about a low D, below middle C, to E above high C. So we can find a vocal part for any lady that comes. And we sing without any accompaniment. It's all a cappella music, and that's one of the unique things about it. We also start all of our songs with a pitch pipe. We're just given a pitch, and we find our note from there, and we begin singing. And the one thing that's wonderful about Sweet Adeline's is it's so inclusive for all women. Women from all walks of life can come. We actually offer financial support for women that would like to be involved but just can't meet the financial obligations of the international membership as well as the monthly dues that we have. So there's a vocal part for every woman and all ages. We have in our group, we have girls as young as 16, and we have ladies as old as in their 80s. So it's singing is not limited to age, and it's not limited to talent, because we believe that every woman has a part in Sweet Adeline's.
What kind of have some of them been out in the workforce and come and participate? What walks of life do they come from?
They come from all walks of life. Women that have jobs all day long. They get home and they want some sort of release, some kind of artistic release, and they come out and they meet with ladies. We also appeal to women that are home with their children all day long and need some sort of release in the evening to get away. And so it appeals to them. It appeals to business women. We have women that have master degrees. We have women that have no degrees and girls still in high school. So it appeals to all sorts, and that's what makes it really wonderful.
So what attracted you to this particular, have you always been interested in it, or how did you?
I've always loved singing. Through high school, I was in choral groups and enjoyed that, and always sang in the church choir, but singing a cappella is completely different, and the way the chord structure is for barbershop harmony is different as well. And I think what attracted me was initially to have some time out of the house in the evening to get to meet other women, other walks of life, and to have a couple of hours without children. And I think that was probably the initial thing that got me to Sweet Adeline's.
By the way, you mentioned the harmony, which is slightly different. Explain that. It's in basic layman's terms.
In basic terms. The chord structure, and our pianist could probably explain it a little bit better. Mm-hmm. The way the chords are put together, the melody is not it is the predominant sound that you hear, but it's the way it's chorded is your bass is the bottom, your berry, which is a harmony that you really don't want to hear. It just kind of blends in there. Then the melody is next, and then the tenor is above that. So with regular choral music, the melody comes first, and then the other parts are below that. With this, the melody is the second.
So what's the most unusual venue you've sung in? as because you guys go out, as I indicated, as a matter of fact, a moment ago, Valentine's Day, and there are, the Sweet Anne Lions are out. And as a matter of fact, one of the reasons why it was a little difficult to get some of the folks from the Sweet Anne Lions and the barbershop is because everybody is out on Valentine's Day. But what's the most unusual venue do you think you...
We've done all sorts of things. We've done women's groups, a Republican women's club. We've done weddings. We've done funerals. We've done the Chicken Festival. Mm-hmm. We've sung. We've performed at church activities, church events. We've performed outside at Shorebird Stadium. We've performed in the park for retirement luncheon or dinner. So there's a variety of things, and we have a variety of songs for each occasion, which makes it really nice.
What was it like in the sports arena? I mean, that's pretty, you know, as opposed to something, a place that's very enclosed so that you can really hear everything, but something that's open air, you can't really hear yourselves, and it's difficult even for the audience to hear. What was that like?
The greatest thing you have to remember is your notes and words.
Above everything else, right?
That's right. You have to be independent of yourself and your part, and that's why the weekly rehearsals are wonderful, because you learn to sing based on the feeling that you have within yourself. So a lot of times we'll sing with our eyes closed. So we're taught to listen to the other parts and balance your part with it. Sometimes we will stand back to back so that we don't see one another, and you're taught to listen more that way. So when you do have venues like the Shorebird Stadium, you remember how it felt, how your part felt, and you just sing it, and somehow the blend is wonderful.
What's your favorite song?
My favorite song varies from day to day. Currently, we're working on one that I really, really love. Mm-hmm. We sing a lot of the old tunes, the old ones. You know, nowadays, the lyrics are probably not as in-depth. We have ones like baby, 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 baby. We're enjoying ones from long ago that the current one is If I Give My Heart to You. And that's a beautiful melody.
Can you sing a little of it?
Well,
just a couple of phrases there.
If you had a pitch pipe and I could start on the correct pitch, how about I tell you the words? The words are, if I give my heart to you, will you handle it with care? Will you always treat me tenderly and in every way be there? If I give my heart to you, will you promise all your love? Will you swear that you'll be true to me by the light that shines above?
And perhaps somebody will be singing that today on Valentine's Day?
Yes.
Now, your groups are out today?
We have no ladies that are out today.
No ladies
the
out today?
The men are taking charge today. The men's local group, the Peninsulaires, meet on Tuesday evenings, and the ladies group meet on Monday evenings. And our ladies really enjoy Florida in the winter. So we have a lot of our members that fly south for the winter. And so invariably, we're missing a part here or there. It takes the four parts to go out and sing barbershop harmony. So we have no local ladies out of our chapter that are singing today. But we have had in years past.
So you intend to do this for a very long time? I mean, it's...
I've heard that music is ageless and keeps a woman young. So it also helps to keep your mind sharp. You know, learning the notes, learning the words helps to keep your mind sharp. And they encourage, as you grow older, to do more things to keep your mind sharp. So that's a really good thing to do. So I probably will stay at it for a while.
And there, you indicate there are older women who are in their 80s. How do they do? They do pretty well?
They are remarkable. Just remarkable. Yeah. One of our ladies is in a quartet. She sings bass. We have a couple of ladies that are in quartets that sing parts, and they're 80 or nearing their 80s, and actually just sang with some of the 16-year-olds.
How is that, by the way, this age difference? I mean, you know, on the one hand, you might have somebody who's right in their 80s, but then somebody who's in their teens or even early 20s. I mean, how does that work?
One of the first things we do when a lady comes in is to help them to understand which part might be best for their voice. Certainly, you can talk to a lady and understand whether her voice is high, the timbre of it is lower. And so our director will usually go to the piano and play some notes to help the lady find out which part she is. Typically, younger girls sing higher. And Sweet Adelines has a group called Young Women in Harmony that centers on young women and actually has designed music that goes with their voice timbre a little bit better. But the girls that we have in our group are able to sing just about any part.
And do the older women take the younger ones under their wing? I mean, is there what kind of relationship like that?
Yeah, it's a wonderful relationship. We have a lot of grandmothers, and the young girls come in and get hugs every night and become a part of the group. And it's Sweet Adelines, our group, the Ocean Bay chapter, is a very loving group and a very accepting group.
And sort of along these lines, when we're talking about musicians, we have Shelley Abbott. She has been, and maybe not too soon in the future, but she has been has had a full-time musical career since, I think, 1993 is what I read. Wow. Has that been that long? And God it's knows what happened. I think the other date was somewhere in the 70s or something when you were doing this.
Oh, wow. I started when I was 26.
Oh,
actually,
my gosh.
Performing out in public, yeah.
And how did you
I'm not
get?
Gonna tell you how many years it's been. No, I don't care. It's been like 33 years.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How did you get into doing it?
It's my mother's fault.
Is it?
It is.
Go ahead.
It was terrible. She volunteered me to sing for a local VFW, a Friday night hullabaloo, just to get on stage and play guitar. I play guitar as well. Mm-hmm. And I said, "You did what?" She said, "Oh, yeah, so-and-so. I told him you'd come and sing with him Friday night." And I was like, okay. So I went out and I bought my Beatles guitar, and I practiced three songs. And I went down and stood up on the stage, and my voice was shaking so badly inside. And I'm sure it didn't come outside, but I sang those three songs, and I said, "I'll never do this again. Ever, ever will I never do this again." And I went out the next day and formed a band. And then we went in the studio and recorded some music, and I've been doing it ever since. And have not been with a band for a few years. It's so much easier now because you have the background CDs and everything that you can use to play guitar and sing with. So now I don't have to worry about the bass player having to go to a Little League ball game or, you know, the drummer not being able to come because his wife said, "You're absolutely not going out tonight." So that's... I've been singing with a friend, dear friend of mine, for years now, Tina Cron, and she just recently has gone into some other things, and we still sing a little bit, but usually it's me, and I do everything.
So how was it? Was it difficult getting started, or did it seem like a natural thing?
Well, my mom and dad and I sang all the time as a youth. We sang gospel and country, and. But it was around the house or at a campground or something like that. So, but to actually fall into it, I think I just fell into it. People just automatically started liking what I did. I didn't think I was that good, but everybody else seemed to like it. So I just kind of it just happened. I don't have any formal training. I taught myself how to play guitar, and I just love people, and I guess people just like me for some reason.
So what is it like then playing out, particularly as a musician, and especially when you move to being sort of full-time musician? That's really putting yourself on the line financially.
Well, that's what happened in 93. I actually went full-time doing it. I worked as a dock master in St. Michael's for 10 years and recorded boat songs and parodies, and I was called the singing dock master. And it was really hard going out and working from 8 o'clock in the morning at 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning, getting off at 7 and 8 at night, and then running to a venue to play until 2 in the morning. So it got to be a little too much for me, so I had to make a choice. And my music career was going very well. And at the time, that was prior to the smoking bans and all of the other things that really corrupted the bar scene. But I don't know. I can't remember ever looking for a job. I just people started calling. And, you know, money was great, and so I took the chance. And I don't have no regrets, none whatsoever in my life, none. None. I loved it.
Doesn't sound as if it was tough to get jobs. Was it? What is that life like? I mean, because most people work, you know, 9 to 5 or whatever it is, and here you are in the evening doing your thing. I think Willie Nelson has a song about that. I don't know whether. I mean, what is that like?
Well, I'm probably one of the few musicians who does not consume alcohol. I've never drank, and I've never done any drugs, and so that's the biggest wear and tear, I think, on a nighttime musician. I've always taken my job very seriously. It is a job to me. It's not a night out on the town. I think the hardest thing might be, of course, the hours, but not until I got older did I realize that the hours was taking a toll on me. But people, such a wide, diversified crowd, most places that I played. You had there was always one in a crowd, of course, who I've seen the day when we played behind chicken wire in a bar in Delaware, just because if they threw beer bottles, didn't hit the band equipment. And then there have been places like that have been beautiful. I've played weddings. I've played everything probably but a bar mitzvah. I'm sure that's to come soon.
And down the road there, right?
Now that I mentioned it, I'm sure. But there wasn't really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't difficult after I stopped trying to do two jobs. But I love people, and the diversified crowd, like I started to comment on, was in my field, I play every kind of music from Sinatra to Lady Gaga. And when you play a wedding, you have people, kids from 7 and 8 years old all the way up to 90 year olds who want to hear some Sinatra. So you have to be diversified. And when I started playing by myself, it was so much easier because you didn't have to teach 5 people the song. You could sit and learn to play the guitar and to learn the words, and then you had your soundtracks behind you. So it was so much easier. And then I found that I could just branch out, and my voice had such a range. I was blessed with that. Yeah, I just blessed with a voice.
And in any particular genre, by the way, that's your favorite?
You know, I was dubbed with the Patsy Cline voice.
I was going to say, there's a tribute, as I understand, on your...
There is. Everybody kept telling me that I sounded a lot like Patsy Cline. And I, of course, you don't see those things yourself. And then I decided that I would make some money from it, if that was true. So a couple friends of mine, one that did Elvis, and he sounded exactly like Elvis, and a friend of mine who didn't think she sounded like Loretta Lynn, but she looked like Loretta Lynn. So we did started doing a dinner theater show, and it was called, I even forget what it was, a tribute to Patsy or something like that. And the whole theory was that Patsy would host, or excuse me, Loretta Lynn would host a show, one last final show for Elvis and Patsy Cline, and that God was going to give them the chance to come back and do one last show because they were taken so quickly from life. And it was wonderful. It was a wonderful show. And I still do it, but I do it now just the Patsy Cline part, as if she had never died. Of course, I have to because I've put on a little weight and because I've grown, too, you know, in many ways. But I do the gown, the wig, the whole bit, and come out on the stage as if she had never passed away, which, being older, I have to do that now.
Well, as a matter of fact, one of the things that struck me, and I particularly up in Harrington, because I do these things, there are a lot of like tribute bands.
Yes.
I mean, is that something that's really common that musicians do, or is that a big industry? It seems like it is.
I think it is. I think it is. I kind of get disappointed because when I see I'm going to a show for Bill Haley's Comets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see it as Bill Haley's Comets. I see it as Bill Haley and the Comets, which it used to be. And when I get there, I'm kind of like, oh, well, this is not Bill Haley and the Comets. So, but then there are some tribute bands. I saw one at Harrington, actually, not long ago with, not Manham Steamroller, but the other Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Mm-hmm. They were wonderful. So, yeah, there are people out there who do look and sound a lot like the original people. So kudos to them. Yeah, go for it.
I mean, because we seem to, and when you do something like that, I mean, how? I mean, obviously, you there's the physical aspect. You want to sort of dress up, but do you get into a certain frame of mind, or what? How, explain that a little, that
you
process.
You do. I'm a completely different person the minute I put. As a matter of fact, I've scared children because they knew me, but mm-hmm. they didn't know me in costume. Because when you arch your eyebrows and you do all the things that, of course, to give the impression, it's more of an impressionism
right.
for me. I don't actually look like Patsy Cline, but when I open my mouth and with the costumes, for lack of a better word, that I use, then everybody will say, I've had people say, oh my goodness, I haven't heard anybody in my life sound like Patsy Cline like that. And it just takes me back to my childhood when I used to listen to this song or that song. And I've seen 80 and 90-year-old people in the audience just cry. And it's a wonderful feeling that you can bring back those memories.
Can you sing a little Patsy Cline here? A couple of bars? Yes.
I knew you were going to do that to me. Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. That's something like that. Okay.
Now she's becoming self-conscious, right?
No, I'm actually not. Yeah, I am.
Yeah, okay.
Easy to hide behind your guitar and microphone. You know that.
That's right, exactly that. And it's like, yes, there's somebody else out there. That's right. That's yeah. And you also, now you brought a CD.
I did.
What is the song? We're going to play a little of this song.
Through the Years. That's a Kenny Rogers song. I thought it would be very appropriate for today, being Valentine's Day.
That's true. Well, why don't we hear a little of that, and we'll come back in a moment.
All right.
Better every day. You kiss my better every day. You kiss my tears away, as long as it's okay, I'll stay with you through the
Now, you talked about the idea that you, you've been doing a lot of singing, particularly at places where at places where there are older folks, particularly who are suffering from either Alzheimer's or some kind of dementia. Talk a little bit about that, because it's really sort of an interesting connection, I think, that you've established there.
Oh, it's amazing. I started playing in, well, I'm a big fundraiser anyway, and so I'm a big people give back type person. And I started playing a lot of the adult care in a lot of the nursing homes in the area. And I knew I had a connection with people. I could just pull them in. And I think it's more the memory of the songs that I sang that brought them back. But I started playing a couple places where people were actually health challenged. And Alzheimer's is one of them. I play at the Summerford Place in Annapolis. That's not a plug. Some of the people there were combative and just non-responsive. And I would see them when I was playing music that the mouth was moving to the words. And so I thought, wow, what a great thing. Let me put the words to these, the karaoke CDs, use them and put them up on the screen and let's see what happens. And it was amazing. The whole room filled with music of these people singing. And not only was it the ones who were healthy, but it was the ones who barely had any response whatsoever other than to this music. And there was a particular lady she was just the grouchiest person I had ever met. Mm-hmm. Nothing pleased this lady. And I said, so-and-so, come up and sing with me. Me? She said, and I said, why, sure. Well, why would you want me? I said, come try it. And I put on a song, a Perry Como song, It's Impossible. And my lands, when this woman opened her mouth, I shut down. She had the most gorgeous soprano voice, and not the ones that you hear in a church warbling. The clearest, most beautiful, and she never missed a word. And I mean, this is a person who has severe enough dementia or Alzheimer's to be in a lockdown facility. I mean, and she has just come around 360. She's not mean anymore. And she comes in with a smile on her face. It's like music has reached these people. And I'm going to do a talent show in a few weeks at the establishment, just so the families can see the difference in their loved ones. And what music just reaches out. Music is goes to the soul. You know, it's amazing. And I love it. And I won't stop doing it. I am retiring, semi-retiring.
Well, by the way, you talk to anybody about why music may create this transformation in people like that? I mean, do people have any scientists or health caregivers? Do they have any sense about?
I think they've done studies.
Yeah.
I just don't think it has been done on a one-on-one thing where there's actually been a problem and it's been seen. It hits a part of their mind. I can tell you in layman's terms what I think, but I'm certainly not
sure,
a medical type person, but. You can look in somebody's eyes and you can see when you reach them. And it goes into their memory that's not been affected by the disease. That's all I can say. It gets to a part of their memory that is solid. It's solid in there. You just got to reach in far enough to get it. And I think when you get into that spot, it brings back. And it's just, they don't even read the screen sometimes. Some of them just look at me and I'm mouthing the words and they'll sing right along with me. It's just a miraculous thing that I found. And I hope I die singing to these people. I would love to be doing it when I die. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I do know that by the way, that where we store words and so on for singing mm-hmm. is actually kept in a separate place than the words that we use to speak. That they're actually kept separate. For instance,
right.
You can have people who cannot speak, but who can sing, and so all those words and those connections are actually place somewhere else, which sounds as if, for whatever reason, then this particular case or these particular cases, that just has not been affected, as opposed to the speaking, that kind of thing.
There was another lady who who has since passed, but she was laying and didn't even respond. She was unresponsive. And I would sing the specific song for her each time I went before she deteriorated. Mm-hmm. And she would dance and she would sing the song. And once she was laid in sort of a, I want to say, not a coma, but close. It was near her death. And I sang the song and brought her over next to me. And she reached out for my hand and held my hand. And you could feel her grab my hand. And I could feel the tension on it. And she couldn't sing because her mouth was so dry. And it was pathetic. Not pathetic. It was sad.
Yeah.
But I knew she heard me. Beyond all of her other senses, the music was still reaching in. And she was happy. That's something you can't buy. You can't pay for that in a bar room.
Different than a bar.
Very different in a bar.
Also, we have with us Gordon Bugby. He's a pianist and he also plays for events at the Dorchester Center for the Arts in Cambridge. And welcome. Well, let me, when I talked to you, I think it was the other day, you said you've been playing for about 70 years. Is that right?
About. Yes.
So how did you get started?
Well, I had, again, as Shelley said, my parents got me involved. Took me piano lessons when I was 6 or 7 years old. I don't remember what it was. And I learned, piano. I frustrated that teacher too badly, and I think she gave up on me. But I had a pretty good start. They liked to sing. My mother and father, both school teachers, they liked to sing, and they thought, he kept saying, if you learn to play piano, you'll get along fine. So I did for a little while, but obviously it frustrated that teacher, and finally I stopped taking lessons. And then I started again when I got into junior high. I found a teacher that taught me chords. And as she mentioned, that was a turning point when I learned how to use chords. That relieves you of an awful lot of sight reading. I mean, it just becomes automatic. And of course, he put me into he decided I would join the union, because I was playing with a high school bunch of guys at that time. And the piano player just does rhythm. He just, bump chick, bump chick. That's all piano players do in bands at that time. So once I got the chords, I could use fake books. Now, fake books, I don't know if
explain a little bit what those are.
Well, fake books are illegal. They were illegal at one time. Copies of all the music that was currently popular. And it violated all the copyright laws. And so they were sold with a guy with a brown bag and an overcoat, and you paid cash. And when you got one of those, you had openings to all the music that was available. You had to watch. You couldn't play at any place where you got paid, because then the ASCAP would come after you. But that was a turning point there, too, in the fake books. Later on, after I'd gone through high school and played with these local guys, I got drafted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I started to college, but I ran out of money about a year and a half into that, so I got drafted and went down to Fort Bragg and got my basic training. I was in basic training, and somehow I got playing piano at one of the clubs, and the guy from the band came over and says, "Hey, could you come over and play for us in the band?" And of course, this was in the airborne division down there, Fort Bragg. And I said, "Well, if I wouldn't have to jump," he says, "Oh, no, you didn't have to jump." And he says, "I can get you out of the rest of basic, because I'm only halfway through basic when this happened." And it was kind of an interesting development. But I did take it. And of course, they didn't need a piano player, because there's no MOS, no military operational number for a piano player. So I picked up on the clarinet, which I had some exposure to in high school. So I went from there, and of course, they put me in the band, and then I discovered that they did want me to jump out of airplanes, which was a little bit
disconcerting.
Disappointing. Well, yes. And I still dread the thoughts of doing that. But during that time, I played played piano for the boxing matches, mm-hmm. keyboards, little pump organs that they take out in the field. And I'll never forget sitting there and when mm-hmm. you play the Star Spangled Banner at a boxing match, they call everybody to attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get this organ up to pressure, So I started pumping away on the thing, and it squeaked. And that was the only sound that came out was the squeak. You want a kind of a glorious sound
to
come out when you start that thing. And that was one of the high points of my military career. But then after I got out of the military, I went back to school at Youngstown University. I was studying engineering at the time. And had moved to a place, we had built a house, and was right down the street from a place that had square dances. And the local guy says, hey, we need a rhythm guy, play square dances. So we did that. And that helped a lot. We got paid some of the cut of the gross that, you know, they made for the attendance. So that helped out. That was my first actual paying job. And of course, I wasn't doing that under union regulations. But then I ran into some guys from work that said, geez, you know, we could use a piano player. And they were union fellows, those fellows. So I went to work with them. We played places like the Elks Club, any place where you could drink on Sunday, and a lot of places where you probably shouldn't, but we did. Mm-hmm. And as Shelley said, I was one of the few guys that didn't drink at that time. And so I think they got me on board mainly so I could drive them home, because rest of the guys weren't quite that good of shape. So that went from there, and I did that until Youngstown ran out as far as engineering needs.
All right.
And then moved to Pittsburgh, and I didn't do much more playing at that time because I was out of the Union territory, but then I got a chance. We did own a piano. We bought a piano. I kept playing it, but later on they developed these keyboards. Electronic
keyboard. Right.
And that was a turning point, and I used one of my IRAs, which was by that time valid. Mm-hmm. I bought a keyboard, and that kind of put me in a whole different category. This was still just playing for myself, but having the keyboard meant that I could, I could develop my skills a little better, and finally started doing that, and did that. In that case, until I retired from the University of Pittsburgh as a facilities manager, and when we moved down here, of course I had the keyboards with me, and the first thing that happened was we got involved with the Arts Center there in Cambridge, and they wanted to organize a band for the annual showcase, and so I was recruited to do that, and I met some guys there in Cambridge at the. Well, one of them was a musician, had been a musician, and he and I paired up later on because the other fellows that did join the band for Showcase were professionals. They wanted to make some money. I just wanted to do it for fun.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what my motivation has been all the time since then. And as Shelley said, we get involved with those places, and Pleasant Day is one of the places where she and I overlap. We overlapped at senior day, too, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And I used her equipment for amplifying because we didn't have that kind of equipment. That was with another band, though. That was a band mostly out of Oxford called Free and Easy that we overlapped. But I've stopped doing that with them. So now I'm just doing it for fun. I mean, the main thing is more fun. But it's more fun with other people. You need other people to back you up. Just remember, she mentioned these chords. Keyboard is basically a rhythm instrument, which it now has canned rhythms built in.
Oh, that's right.
You can choose them. And the later ones are not as near as good as the early ones, which had some rhythms that you could live with. These rhythms that are coming out on keyboards now, I can't use them. They're not suitable for the music I like. So that's about where we got to now, and now I'm just doing it, as I told you on the phone, mostly to get out and play people, do some birthday parties and places at home. But Shelley mentioned the effect of music on people that are hurt, disabled, and there's one place I play for that. The nonverbals, they can't talk. They can't get words together. But they can sing.
Mm.
They can sing, and they do sing. And they try to tell me what they want to sing, and they can't do that. Sometimes they get somebody to write it down for them, and that helps. But it's mostly hymns. Mm-hmm. And it's been a great thing. So I've developed a sing-along technique where I've got a microphone hanging off my chest, and I can sing into the words, because I got the words on my fake book. And mm-hmm. a lot of hymns are in the fake books. And so I've been using that as a method for occupying my skills. And that's about where we are right now, is just doing those things.
What's your favorite music? I mean, and what do you play predominantly? Because Shelley just indicated she sort of plays like everything, you know. What's your genre?
Mine was the big band era. Yeah. You know, the stuff that we could actually hum a tune to if you needed to, and it had a reasonable beat, and it was when we were right at my prime, of course. That was popular during that late 40s, mm-hmm. after the war, and that was about how it wound up there. Does that answer your question?
That answers my question. Yeah. So I mean, do you have a favorite song?
Well, no, that changes.
Yeah. Oh, it does?
Well, sometimes I wind up without using music and find myself playing part of a song as the bridge, as the center section of mm-hmm. another song, and I say, well, where'd that come from? And I've been studying up on that. Oliver Sacks wrote a book on music mm-hmm. in the brain. Mm-hmm. And he says, you know, that's quite possible that you have a different area that you need to focus. And I don't even think about it when I'm doing it. It's just, you just start that song and you go on. It's kind of startling. And I've found now that my left hand does its own thing without me doing anything about it, because it's where the chords lie.
Right, exactly.
I can do things within the structure of those chords, as right. they're marked on the music. I can turn it loose, and it just does amazing things, which has been kind of a fascinating development. So, but it's still fun. That's the main thing. It's fun, and that it's mostly fun if you got somebody else to play the other part, like she said, the melody part or some. And most of the people I play with, they're not able to improvise that much on it. So it's mostly solo work right now.
Mostly solo work, and the audience. The audience is. I mean, before, I guess you played in bars before, and now
you play in bars.
What's the contrast between? Shelley kind of alluded to it a bit, but this contrast between, on the one hand, they're all kinds of people at bars. On the other hand, the folks that you play to now obviously are much, much different.
Much different. In fact, I have to watch and see if they're patting their feet. Mm. That's how I know I'm getting through. Yep. It's the only way you can tell. Some of the folks, you know, non-responsive to most anything, but some of them, you catch them patting their feet. The folks at Pleasant, they are much better. They actually join in. Sometimes they'll try to sing along with us. But that's the key, is noticing that you're getting to those folks. And for the nonverbals, the same thing. You know, they'll sing along with you, sing harmony parts and everything. But it's very satisfying.
Shelley, in terms of that kind of crowd, I mean, as a player, do you think you establish more of an empathy with your audience, that audience, as opposed to say the audience at some bar or something like that, where people are sort of running around, or?
Oh, yeah.
Is it more
yeah.
captive? I mean.
Oh, sure. Like Gordon said, I had a very wise musician tell me one time. I was in a bar for the longest time, and nobody was paying any attention. Nobody was dancing. And he's like, look at their feet. And I said, what? He said, look at their feet. If they're tapping their foot, they're hearing you. And the answer to your question is, of course, the people at bars are there to drink, dance, congregate. People at nursing homes and in special places, they don't have anybody to come and perform for them. They relish that moment that you're there. It's like you are the best thing in the world there. They don't get the entertainment that they got before then. And again, like we said, you activate that part of their minds that reminds them of when they used to dance with their husband that's been deceased for 10 years. Same with the Sweet Adelines. It's mm-hmm. the same thing. I'm sure when you go to homes, nursing homes and things like that, places like that, you see that yeah. smile comes across their face, and you connect with them.
Well, music is a very personal thing. A song that might touch one individual might not mean the same thing to another individual, and that's why it's just so personal. When you sing in nursing homes, you they might be reliving a moment that they had when they were 20 or when they were 40. When you sing for a wedding, you know, barbershop music is able to span all times. We have music from the 20s, the roaring 20s, and we have music that's been arranged, popular music from today that's been arranged in the barbershop style. So we're able to sing all types of music and touch many different people in individual ways.
Do you do a lot of places where the older people, particularly the people who have, say, for instance, are suffering from some kind of dementia or some kind of...
We do. We go into nursing homes quite a bit, the ones in the area. We also, a year or so ago, did a fundraiser for the Make-A-Wish campaign, and we had a concert for Make-A-Wish, and that was a wonderful experience to be able to do that. And we held it at Holloway Hall and had the community come in and support us, and we did a concert and had several other guests come on and perform, and then we were able to give that money back to the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Shelley, you've been a working musician. People starting out in this business, in the music business, want to do kinds of things as you did. You have any tips for them? Any advice? Sage advice? considering retirement, right?
Well, again, I'm semi-retiring.
Semi-retired, that's
right. An art galleria. But, you know, things have changed so drastically over the years. Everything has become computer-oriented and everything. A true musician to me is a person who has studied music, can play an instrument, can sing, that has something to offer besides what comes out of a box. Because I think just about anybody can sit down with a computer and produce music. Like you said, the beats aren't the same anymore. be true to it. And I think my biggest thing that I missed out on when I was younger in music was not giving back to a society that needed the older people. We tend to lose the fact that it's all for money. And it's not for all for money. You got to give something back. Mm-hmm. So just make sure that if you start in the business, that you just don't take and take and take and take. I mean, it's easy to go out there and make $500 a night and say that's all I can do. But to go out there and play for nothing and see the eyes of people who really appreciate it, you can't, like I said before, you can't buy that kind of love. You can't buy that kind of reward. So give back something and be true to the music. You know, so not everybody's like. Not everybody likes the same kind of music. Like, I'm a fan of Gordon's. He knows that. He's quite talented. And I haven't heard you yet, but the Sweet Adelines, of course, they're so talented. So everybody has something different to offer, from a trumpet player to a vocalist. So, and I disagree. Not everybody can sing. Well, no, let me correct that. Everyone can sing. But not everyone should sing.
I agree with that.
That was one of the problems being a keyboard player.
I agree
with
that.
When the rest of the band took a break, the bartender's sister-in-law wanted to sing. And who was not drinking? The keyboard player, the piano player.
Gordon, any advice you have to people who are thinking about getting into it? And obviously, I mean, you've had a long, very long career. Any advice to some?
Well, I wouldn't do it professionally, obviously, because I had better means. But I'd do it for fun. Forever, and that's what I'm planning to do. That's what I'm hoping to do. So that's what I'm doing right now, anyhow, as long as my fingers still work.
Someone told me, once a musician, always a musician.
I think so. As long as that one, the hand's moving along, and he'll be okay.
Well, arthritis hasn't seemed to affect my hands yet. Other parts, but not there.
Talking about music, I mean, as I've watched music, I mean, it's changed so dramatically. I mean, as a matter of fact, I think it... A few years back, somebody had said that rap music as a genre was now more popular than rock and roll music. Okay, that gives you a sense about the dramatic change that has now taken place. How do you deal with that change? Because you try to sort of keep up too as well.
I do. Keep up without doing the negative music. There is a place, I guess, for rap music. It's not something I prefer, and that doesn't mean it's bad music. There's a talent there, for sure. My problem with that type of music is the aggressiveness in it. Mm-hmm, and you have to remember that what comes out of your mouth affects the people around you. And it really can, some of this music can create anger. And then, you know, you've got somebody who's drinking alcohol and they're already anxious, and then you're just playing all this boom, the boom, the boom, the boom. And, you know, some people can get out of hand like that. I have a theory that if I'm drawing a crowd that is not a positive crowd, I'll change my music. If I'm playing dance music, which I can personally play dance music, I have no problem with that. But if I see that the crowd is turning around a little bit, then I'll go back and play a country song. I'll play a Hank Williams song, and it empties out real quick. So, you got to do crowd control.
I see. What about that, Gordon? You keep tabs on, or at least when you were playing a lot, on how the audience is reacting?
Well, yeah, but it's because I'm playing in these special places.
Right, right.
I'd play for birthday parties. I always agreed if anybody has an 80th birthday party that I'd play for that.
Yeah.
Because it's
right.
It's kind of fun, and these are my contemporaries. And
right.
So, but they usually, you know, they dance. They show signs of
life.
Maybe that's right, Gordon. Maybe we have a captive audience.
Well, that's it. But I'm not. I wouldn't go back and play any of this new stuff that. With the canned backgrounds, which are really coming off of a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Or not necessarily a keyboard, but no, I don't have anything to do with that.
Yeah.
I don't listen to it, and of course I don't listen to music much anyway, except what's on WSCL.
There you go. what do you make of the change that we've seen? We just alluded a moment ago to music. There's this whole set of genres which have now escaped me in many ways, but I mean. What do you mean? I mean, are we talking about? I mean, obviously, as you mentioned, Shelley. I mean, there's obviously talent behind whether it's rap or whatever or hip hop. What do you make of that?
Personally, I think that everyone needs an outlet, and when we were in the 70s, we had our outlets and we expressed it through music. And times have changed, and there's different stories to tell now. I mean, back then we didn't have. Street gangs and all this stuff that a lot of it is, and there's a lot of beautiful rap too. There's a lot. I mean, there is some good in everything, but we told our stories like Johnny Angel and all the car crashes and the drinking games, and you know, we told our stories. And back in the 30s, they told their stories. You know, so it's just storytelling, and I think the generations have just evolved. I don't see it as I see it, everyone as being talented. I just think that it's a different time and a different place. That's all, a different story to tell. Unfortunately, some of those stories can be so, have such an effect on the youth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I have the problem with it, when it's so aggressive, so there's so many referrals to death and to violence and all this. I don't see where that really comes to any good thing. But that's not just my opinion. It doesn't mean it's not talent. Just means that, you know, it's a different story.
What about you, Gordon? I mean, what do you think of all this transition?
I think they're doing it to make money on.
Well, records. That's true.
And those are not talent at all. They're manufactured, and I think that's the direction they're going, is because those seem to sell. I don't think there's any talent involved.
So you would disagree with Shelley?
Well, in that respect, yes.
I think the talent I'm talking about is not necessarily in the music part. They don't really. Most of your rappers don't. You're right. There's a beat. That's all it is. And that's performed by an studio computerized.
Right.
But the ability to write those feelings down and to put them into a beat and to be able to talk. I can't talk that fast. I can't get all that into one sentence. So I respect it. It doesn't mean I have to like it. So yeah. My fear is, again, what it does. And then again, we were, as teenagers, we were connecting with the songwriters of our day. Youth today are connecting with their songwriters, and that's the scary part, because of so many things that are happening on campuses and stuff like that. You have to stop and think, you know, is that because some kid knew that this rap singer was listening to him and felt what they felt or whatever, you know?
Or the other way around, I guess.
Or the other way around, absolutely. So there's good sides. The music part of it, it's not for me.
Isn't that for you?
Nah, it's not for me. It's not for me.
And yet we have musicians and artists today who are remaking songs from long ago. They're changing up the beat a little bit, a few things here or there, the lyrics a little bit, but they're using songs from long ago.
Well, sampling.
Yeah. So they recognize the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. They just are trying to interpret it a little bit different to hit today's music population, I suppose.
Doesn't matter for what kind of crowd I play for, and I bet you run into the same thing. They still go back to the oldies in the country and the 30s. You still can play a Patsy Cline song and have a 16-year-old appreciate it. It's still there.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to end on that note. Shelley Abbott, who is now she's going to be semi-retired as a musician. Also, Gordon Bugby, who has played as a professional musician, but now is playing for fun. And that's great. And also we have Faith Flynn, who's with the Ocean Bay Chorus, which of course is part of the Sweet Adelines. And we appreciate all of you taking part and having a nice discussion about music on this Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush. Thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC 14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit pac14.org.